My name is Lindwe Masebo. I'm a chairperson of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Anneli Lopez and a member of the committee. Start from the back, then Dr.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dr. Tembekwayo, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tanjwe Mpulo, member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Agnes Tuck, and I'm a member of the committee. Thank you.
I am Tulofelo Mutsiri, new member of the committee.
Chantal King, member of the committee.
Nobuzola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
And my name is Nick Kornhoff. My introduction will be a little bit longer because I'm going to use the opportunity to congratulate the chair. She obtained her LLB degree 2 days ago. She started her studies in 2012, and she's a very active politician. She is very active in this parliament. She chairs many other ad hoc committees, apart from chairing this one. And she's very active in the movement we do represent. So it is quite an achievement. It is, in fact, a remarkable achievement. I'm also the chair of the Parliamentary Wine Cellar. And normally when somebody achieves something, I pick a special bottle of wine, and then this wine is not from the cellar. It comes from my own cellar. But this wine is a wine that will never be bottled again.
Wow.
It comes from the wine farm originally with the name La Brie, and that's the French meaning of that is shelter. So you, with your LLB degree, you will be able to create a shelter for yourself, but you will also protect the shelter of others. And then this name of this farm, it was first awarded in 1691 to a gentleman, a French gentleman with the name Jean Telfort. And then they renamed the farm to Labourie. And the meaning of Labourie is labor. And I know that you've worked very hard for your LLB. So I think it's a very appropriate wine. It's a Shiraz. It's a 2014 vintage. So you were 2 years in your studies, but it's very drinkable now. And I hope that you enjoy it, either with a special person, but you must drink it slowly. I hope it's not corked. And this wine was also for 1 year. We were very lucky to get 1,000 bottles, and we put on the Speaker's Choice label on it. And that wine sold out in this parliament in 6 weeks. So luckily I got an original bottle, and I want to present it to you, Chair, and I hope that you will be a very successful lawyer, and for me and Ali Lodri, who are already in the club of lawyers.
Thank you very much to that Honorable Goronoff. Indeed, it was not an easy road. I remember I was even having a phobia of second semesters, because in 2012, second semester, after writing my first module, then my daughter passed on. So I couldn't do anything else. And the following year, after writing my first module, my brother passed on. And so in the third year, I was just here, and I was expected to preside when we finished at 4 in the morning, and I was writing at 8. And so I couldn't get permission to go off, so it was really tough. But sometimes when I thought of just leaving and hanging my boots, I could hear my father's voice from the grave saying, you know, so I told you that I don't have money and there's no will. that you can get from me, but the only will for yourself is education. And nobody will take that from you. So that kept me going. And on Monday, it was the great day. And thank you very much. I know I had so many support from this committee, encouragement, especially from the lawyers themselves, Dr. Lotrit, Mr. Honorable Koronoff, and so they really encouraged and everybody else. And said, you know, it seems impossible until God says it's possible. So thank you very much. And I won't disappoint. Yes. Thank you very much. Let's have the introduction from the AG's office, and then we can continue. I think members who also have they usually have they don't want to phone you and you drop the phone when you say they're saying they are conducting a stakeholder satisfaction questionnaire. So you did it. You do it immediately after we've done. With the presentation and the engagement. Thank you very much. Yeah, you can.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. But first, congratulations. That's a massive achievement. I'm Tiens Elof from the Auditor General. I'm accountable for the science and technology portfolio, responsible for all audits within the specific portfolio.
Thank you. My name is Zikona Njebe from Auditor General.
Good morning, I'm Marilise Lowe. I'm Senior Manager, more technical side of our office. So also presenting various audits, but closely involved with the science portfolio as it's in with our business unit.
Thank you very much. I think the stage is yours for the presentation.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thanks for this opportunity to present the audit outcomes of science and technology. It's part of our reputation promise that we want to enable the portfolio committees to have oversight. On slide 3, we indicate that it must assist you as part of your budget review and recommendation process. It's important to have the annual reports of the previous year, to have an understanding of the issues in the audit report for the way forward in this portfolio. Then with regard to our focus, if we move to slide 5, the Auditor General audit reports is on 3 levels. It's on the financial statement level, the normal audit opinions of the financial statements, to indicate if it's a fair and reliable statement that is presented to you. The second level is reliability of the performance information, as well as the credibility, the second level of the audit report. And the third level of the audit report relates to compliance to key legislation. To just on a high level sensitize the audit, the portfolio committee with regard to what different audit opinions we express on slide 6, we have indicated that we have unqualified opinions with no findings. That's the so-called clean opinions for auditees. That implies that the financial statements is correctly and fairly presented. It implies that the performance report that's included in your annual report is accurate and relevant to that specific entity, and that you have an entity that comply with all key material legislation as from indicated by the audit directive that we evaluate. Financially unqualified were findings. That implies that the financial statements is still unqualified, it's correct, we could rely on it, but there could be findings on the annual performance report. It could be that there's limitations or material misstatements, or it's not correctly reported as approved by the Portfolio Committee and Parliament, or it could be that there is material issues with key legislation that's highlighted within the audit report. A qualified audit opinion, in this specific environment, we are not able to express that the financial statements are fair representative with specific lines or statements within the financial statements. That's a qualified. Adverse is where we're not in a position. There's various items in the financial statements that is not correctly stated. And then this claimed on a very high level is we are not in a position to give an audit opinion about that financial statements. In this portfolio, we have only two types of audit report issues. It's unqualified with no findings and then unqualified with findings. If I could move to slide 7, just to explain what we utilize, the coloring within the slides and the arrows, the movement. Unqualified with no findings is a green report, clean report. Unqualified with findings, yellow. I'm not going to explain the rest for this portfolio. Arrow upwards is an improvement in the environment. A yellow arrow is more or less the same or very slight improvement or very slight regression. And then a red arrow is a regression. The auditees that's included in this portfolio is the auditees that we actually audit. The first four is the Department of Science and Technology, HSRC, Human Science Research Council, the NRF and the CSIR. We also included the so-called Section 4 free auditees within the portfolio. That's not directly audited by the Auditor General, but for completeness purposes, we have included the audit results in this presentation. If I now could move to slide 9, that's like a snapshot for the portfolio on a very high level. Clean audits. The portfolio improved from the previous year with only 25%, so we only report now on the 4 auditees that we audited to a 75%. It's only NRF that is unqualified with a finding. The rest are all clean within this portfolio. Qualified financial statements, we have no qualified financial statements. It's similar to the previous year. All of them are unqualified. Even the Section 4 frees are unqualified. Quality of performance reporting, that is the performance reporting on service delivery. This specific year there was an improvement. The previous year there were 2 of the auditees that have had issues in the audit report. This year we were able to sort it all out. It's unqualified with regard to performance reporting. Then with findings on compliance, the only entity of the 4 that we audit that have a finding on non-compliance is NRF. It's similar to the previous year, but NRF in the previous year it was on performance information or performance reporting. This year it's on expenditure management within the entity. Then irregular expenditure in total for the portfolio, it increased from 12 million in its current expenditure to 52 million in this specific year. I will give more detail on the irregular later on. Then the process for accountability in terms of our focus is to ensure that there's accountability within the portfolio. It's this wheel of accountability. How we see it is that the targets and the planning must be in place. The performance targets must be evaluated by this committee, and it's part of your BRRR process. The budgets must be evaluated. Then the entity will get this assignment to perform on this level. The second one is the number 3. They must ensure there's internal controls, proper supervisions, and processes how to implement and achieve that specific targets. Then there is a number 4, monitoring, the check process. They must have their own monitoring, and there is assurance providers. It's management, it's the audit committees, it is the portfolio committee, for example, that must ensure that it's monitored, and there must be consequences for transgressions or poor performance. That will inform a number 6, better outcomes and service delivery to the public. The wheel of accountability. Slide 11. On a very high level, you'll see the portfolio increase from the 16-17 year, 75%, the department, CSIR, HSRC, clean audits. NRF is unqualified with a finding. The previous year it was only CSIR, and the other entities were unqualified with findings. So it's similar to the 15-16 specific year, but different entities. Slide 12 indicates the movement. I think I already highlighted it. So the improvement areas is the department as well as HSRC. CSIR remained unqualified with no findings, and NRF remained unqualified with one finding. slide 13, the drivers of internal control. For the portfolio, this is not per entity, there is an improvement on leadership as well as financial and performance management. Governance is similar to the previous year. The department achieved unqualified with no findings on performance information this specific year. That's one of the reasons why we improved. As well as HSRC did have a finding last year on supply chain management. They have resolved the material issues in supply chain management. NRF have implemented policies and procedures on irregular. They have processes, but they was not in a position to prevent all irregular. I will later discuss the detection controls also. Assurance providers, slide 14. We have identified on a high level that within the three entities, the department, HSRC and NRF, there is still issues of providing some assurance, especially with regard to making sure that your performance information is correct, complying with supply chain. It's only CSIR that we have given a green on senior management level. The accounting authority officer, we're satisfied with what the accounting officer and accounting authorities are implementing within the portfolio. We're satisfied with the minister's first level. Second level of assurance providers, internal audit and audit committee, we are also satisfied, it remained unchanged. And then the third level evaluation is the portfolio committee. As indicated in the previous slides, we normally evaluate the portfolio committee to see what your involvement with regard to the audit is, and we are satisfied in that specific area. Slide 15. Now we return back to our cycle or a circle of accountability. Planning, there was an improvement. Action plans were implemented within the entities. You will see there is improvement in the entities, especially with regard to performance indicators and targets. The do section, we have an overall improvement in our internal control environment for the portfolio. Financial remains the same. There's an improvement in the performance management. The IT side also improved. There is still issues on IT-related items within the portfolio. And then there were improvements. There's no vacancies in CFO positions. We only highlighted the CFO positions because that's a key management position within the entities. The check, it's similar to the previous year, as well as the act. It's similar. We didn't identify any issues on consequence management. You will later see a slide that we have included, as well as all items under irregular, fruitless and wasteful are under investigation within the portfolio, as well as the supply chain management. We could give you that positive assurance. Slide 16, we want to move forward to financial health and financial management. Slide 17. The financial health in terms of our evaluation, that's with the information that we have, the budgets, we didn't identify any issues for the portfolio from a financial reporting side. So that's a clean approach on that specific financial health issue. Then with regard to irregular, fruitless and wasteful for the last 4 years, slide 18. What we did is we give a definition for fruitless. It's expenditure incurred in vain and could have been avoided if reasonable steps have been taken. There's no value for money. I think that's a serious type of expenditure. With regard to the nature of these expenditures that incurred within the portfolio, it's normally the result of interest being paid, penalties, and cancellation fees. And the contributors is CSIR, it's only 78,000 Rand. You will get the detail in the annual report of CSIR on page 146. It's now 25.2. HSRC, in their annual report, it's on page 152, now 28. And then NRF, page 122, now 39. So it's very limited within the portfolio. And if we look at the improvement from the previous year, it was 4 million. And this specific year that we reported on, it's 291,000 rand for the total of the portfolio. Irregular expenditure incurred if there's a contravention of key legislation, goods and services are delivered, but the prescripts were not followed in all instances. I think that's the essence of irregular expenditure. The nature of the irregular expenditure within the portfolio all relate to supply chain management, this procurement and contract deviations from policies. The contributors to this specific irregular of 52 million is CSIR 7.4 million, the department 14.4 million, HSRC 186,000 rand, then NRO 30 million. The detail of CSIR information is on page 146, note 25 in the CSIR annual report. The department is page 258, note 24. HSRC is page 152, note 27. And NRF is page 121, note 40. I must mention for NRF that there is an anomaly within that specific 30 million. There is one contributor that's actually contributing to that 30 million to the value of plus minus 25 million. So one must take that into account also. Then the type of irregular expenditure, slide 19, that's resulting from previous year. 31% of the expenditure of the irregular was payments, expenses in the previous year only identified in the current year. That's part of that note. And 5% of that of the irregular expenditure includes payments made on contracts irregularly awarded in the previous year. It's important that this process must be followed up, investigated and contained to prevent expenditure in the next year also being classified. 64% of the expenditure of that 52 million relate to non-compliance in this specific year, that's just evaluating the irregular. And then I've included a note there on the last sentence on slide 19. 99%, 52 million plus minus, of this 52.5 million of irregular expenditure was identified by the auditees. I've indicated that I'll give a bit more detail about the detection controls that they've implemented. That actually illustrates that they have policies and procedures and they have processes to detect the irregular. For instance, in NRF, they have identified 100% of the irregular. We as Auditor General was not in a position to identify any further irregular expenditure. That will assist the committee in future to have assurance on that. Slide 20. That's why I highlighted that specific item. The most common findings in supply chain management that we as Auditor General reported on. That's why you see the improvement here. It's only one entity that's for the current year, for the 17-18 year that we report on, it's CSIR, with one specific finding in the management reports. The rest of the entities have identified and reported on the irregular expenditure. So that's an improvement. It actually indicates there's sort of accountability. Then slide 21, consequence management. We have in no auditees do we have any item that we report on consequence management. So that's in place within the auditees, 100%. For the previous year as well as for the specific year. Then supply chain management findings reported in a management report by us for the entities to follow up. There's only one auditee and it's for three suppliers. If you need the information, the department could make that information available. They are busy investigating that specific false declarations of suppliers. The root causes, because we have only NRF one issue on expenditure management, they have implemented the controls within the supply chain environment, they have review processes, and they have monitoring processes, but there were isolated cases that still flow through where people in senior management level at business units didn't comply fully with the supply chain requirements, and that resulted in the irregular expenditure. And we classify it as a slow response because we identify there is processes that are in progress to identify them. It's just address the issue with the specific managers in the regions and business units. Then the status of records review. We have performed the status of records review in the four major entities within the portfolio. As part of the status records review, we try to be very proactive, engaging the accounting authorities and accounting officers within the entity. And we have the following pillars. It's similar to the previous dashboard that we have presented to the portfolio committee. We look at oversight and monitoring, financial management, performance management, procurement and contract management, compliance management, HR, IT, and financial health. There's three type of issues that we identify and reported to the accounting authorities and accounting officer. It's with regard to policy and procedures were not always in place in preventing non-compliance with procurement and contract prescripts. I think that's in the public sector always an issue. The review monitoring process in relation to performance reporting have improved from the previous 3 years, resulting in improvement of audit outcomes. Remember, the department was material finding the previous year, they have addressed it. But to maintain this specific outcome in the portfolio, this is a risky area for the portfolio. They must maintain and improve, ensure that the controls are in place on the annual performance reporting. IT controls, we have reported on IT controls within the entities. They must just make sure that the security management, user access and change controls within the entities. If I then could proceed to slide 25, this is a high level summary of the section 4.3 audits, the audits that we ourselves don't perform. TIA, it's clean. For the last 4 years, it's clean audit reports with no findings on AOPO or compliance and unqualified for the annual financial statements. SANSA, South African National Space Agency, similar. For the last 4 years, it's unqualified with no findings on performance reporting as well as compliance. And then the Academy of Science of South Africa, ASAF, there is an issue with regard to the ASAF Act that require that they must fully comply with the PFMA. But because of the ASAF not being listed as a public entity and the approach that maybe they will not need to comply with the PFMA Act, we as auditors have to report that there was a non-compliance in terms of the ASAF Act sections 2, subsection 2 of 2 in the Act specifically, because that requires full compliance. And you will see it's only one paragraph that we indicate that they don't comply with the PFMA in general. That's the only issue in ASAF that we report on, that's an issue in the audit reports. Then with regard to the recommendations and commitments of the portfolio committee, the committee itself, honorable members and chairperson, The previous one we have indicated is in progress, monitoring the implementation of action plans to address audit findings, exercise oversight over the quarterly reports regarding compliance of laws and regulations, and performance reporting, and the achievement of objectives. I think that's the nature of the portfolio committee. For the new recommendations, we proposed a commitment to the committee. We will communicate with the chair after the meeting to confirm if that's the commitment of the committee, to indicate that the portfolio committee should request management to provide feedback on the implementation and the progress of action plans to ensure further improvement in the audit outcomes of the portfolio. It's to strive for a clean approach to all audit, clean administration. Then our last slide as part of our focus within the AG is just to sensitize the principle that possible corruption could be created where there's a monopoly. You have a department that's responsible for certain aspects and service delivery. It's their requirement. If they have full discretion how to apply and achieve that with a minimum accountability, there's a possibility for corruption. So one must always think about giving direction to your auditees, making sure that they comply with the regulations of National Treasury, the Public Service Commission, all of that regulations they have to comply to ensure that the discretion is actually brought down, and then the accountability will be to this committee and to the minister on a very high level, the principle that we propose. That's from our side, presentation on the audit outcomes for 2018. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honourable members, here the issues, and I think from us, just up front, in fact, members will also attest that we, for instance, as the department made their presentation on the quarterly report on the financial and non-financial, one other question that we've added is the compliance of the buildings that they occupy. So it's now another standard question for all of them. But I think also on this one, the final recommendation that you have made, it is a question that we'll pose to them as they come and present to us. So consider it done by the committee. Honourable members, your questions and comments. Honourable Mfulo, Honourable Goronoff, Honourable King, Honourable Dr. Tembegwai.
Chair, I'm looking at slide 19 around the issue of irregular expenditure. My question is, the irregular expenditure happened in the previous year, and I'm definitely sure there was audit made by the Auditor General's office. Why did you leave it so long? And then out of the blue you say it's irregular expenditure, but before you didn't tell them. So whose fault is it? Is it their fault? No? So that's one of the questions that I want to understand. Is that you cannot leave a person for so long, and then the next thing you are saying you've misbehaved, whereas you've not warned that person before. Then when I look at your yesterday I was having the same report from other portfolio committees. I pick up a common thing. So I'm asking myself, is it the Auditor General's office mistake? Because also on that side there was an audit find, there was a same thing about previous years audit that was not done. Now those people get penalized for that portfolio committee. So I'm asking myself, why is it so common? Why is it the same from the auditor, the committee has got the same mistakes? Actually, who's at fault here? And then when it comes to ASAP, I can see audit outcomes 2014, 15, 15, 16, 16, 17, 2017-18 is the same thing. My question is, since from 2014 you could pick up that ASAP is not complying with the PFMA, were they warned or were they informed? Because now it cannot take you so many years only now to find out this year the audit outcomes, you say they're not complying. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Coroner.
Yes, I will. I'm also on slide 19. You know, the positive about that is 99% was picked up by the department themselves. I'm now curious what is the 1%. But can I say, is that a good thing? And out of the Auditor General's point of view, are you happy that they will then strive not to make the same mistakes in the following year?
Honourable King.
Mine is slide 24. I see all the reviews that you go through. I just don't see risk management. I remember last year there was quite some issues when it comes to IT control and risk management. I see you did highlight something here, but how effective are the risk management processes? And then regards to SF, I remember last year this issue came up again, and it was said that the minister was going to liaise with Treasury. I'm not sure if you have any recollection of that or if you were made aware of it to discuss specifically the issue of SF around the compliance with the PFMA. I think if not, then we just need to do a follow-up on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Tembekwai. Honorable Dr. Tembekwai.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. But mine was based on irregular expenditure, slide 19, and then it has been exhausted, unfortunately, by my colleagues so far. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for that. I think it's important also that the internal audits of the department should also do their work. They are employed to pick up issues before they go to the AG. So I think it's something that we need to insist on the department that they do, and there's proper oversight on the internal auditors of the department. And I think on the issue of the ASAF, it's something is that has been coming over years, and one is wondering if it will be addressed by the amendment bill that will be coming on the science and technology, because it's supposed to encompass everything that needs to be done. So one hopes that it does that, but yeah, also having a brief discussion with the minister, I've raised the issue with her, and she was saying that she doesn't see why ASAF doesn't want to be a public entity, because they don't even have a big budget. So let them just comply and be audited, and we get done with it. Yeah, thank you very much. Over to you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. If I could respond to the first item with regard to irregular expenditure, it must be mentioned that the accounting authority, the entity itself, is responsible to ensure that they comply with all the supply chain management prescripts. The Auditor General is not performing a review of all contracts every year. We also do a sampling basis approach. Then it's not only the external auditor that's performing that review. There's also inputs from management going back to older contracts. There could be contracts that we have identified in the previous year. The department is a good example, where we have identified that there's a non-compliance to a specific contract. Then it was reported to the department, and they sort of disagree and want to get clarity from National Treasury. Then the process starts, because we are not the regulator. National Treasury is the regulator in this environment. They would send letters to the National Treasury's office and get their input on this specific item. Then the National Treasury would rule afterwards and say, this specific expenditure as classified or contract must be classified as irregular. Now, during the previous year, there was expenditure on this contract. Because we disagree, it is still reported. To correct the disclosure, we have a note there, so previous year irregular expenditure identified, then we classify that expenditure as well as the current year expenditure. That's where the previous year expenditure normally occurs from. And in this portfolio, that specific contract makes up a material amount for the entities. There could be other contracts that we as auditor don't evaluate in this specific year, but we see there's expenditure this year, and we select the contract from the registers and wherever it's filed, then we review the contract. So I'm quite honest to you, Honourable Member, we don't review all contracts. It's on a sampling basis. With regard to the previous year outstanding reports in this portfolio, there's no outstanding reports. All the audit reports are issued. We would have reported that to the Honourable Minister if there was any outstanding reports. With regard to ASAF, it's the same issue that was reported in previous years. We have highlighted it to the Executive Authority, the Minister. It is the same issue of compliance to the Public Finance Management Act. It must be a decision to be made by the Minister, and the portfolio must give guidance on this specific aspect. We have reported that for the last 4 years. I think that's the issue in the audit reports. Then with regard to detection of irregular expenditure, any entity must have prevention controls and detection controls. Your prevention controls maybe not detect all your items. It's not only with regard to irregular expenditure. So it's very important for all the entities within this environment to have detection controls. But the PFMA is quite clear on this specific aspect. The management must ensure or prevent irregular expenditure. So detection controls is a second level of control. It's like the Auditor General auditing that specific controls. So it's not healthy to identify irregular expenditure, but it's healthier if you identify it and classify it yourself. So that's given fruit to the entities. Oversight monitoring risk evaluation. As part of oversight and monitoring, that one on top of the status of records review, we also look at the risk management within all the entities and evaluate it from an audit perspective. So we have some sort of a flavor of risk management. In this entities, we have only identified specific issues with regard to IT. I think as if we have, I take note what the Honorable Chairperson said, and then irregular, I hope I've addressed all the aspects. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elof. Is there any other matter, Honorable Tuck?
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on slide 7.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, I see here included not audited by AGSA, Sansatia and ASAF. So I want to know, why do you include them in your report? Because when you report about them, you should also take responsibility for them in your report, and that is what I want to know. Thank you.
Any other question? No. Mr.
Taylor? Thanks, Honourable Chair. We classified Section 43 in terms of the Public Audit Act. That is auditees that from a historical perspective have appointed their own auditors. Subsequent to the Public Audit Act, they also form part of the Auditor General's responsibility, but if they were appointed by themselves in the past, the Auditor General have the choice, if I could use that specific wording, to actually take back that specific auditees. In this case, we didn't went back to the auditees in terms of the audit directive, informing them that we would like to do the audits. That's the history with regard to these three entities. Why we included it in our, this is our presentation to the Portfolio Committee. It was requested in the past and also by the Minister to have an overall view of the portfolio. So that's why we include them as a separate slide at the back. We don't include it in front of the presentation. They will also not pull through to our general report, if I could maybe give you that assurance. Is there anything else that I need to say? That's more or less the items on the section 43. I attend the audit committees. We have some sort of an intervention to have oversight and to guide the auditors. So I'm at the audit committees. I have communication with the auditors because they must perform that audit in terms of our audit directive. So I gave them advice, but it's their responsibility.
Thank you very much, the Office of the AG, for the responses and the presentation. We really welcome your wielding of the stick so that there's compliance with all the issues that are supposed to be complied with. And I think we also welcome the fact that there's an improvement. And we were a bit sad last year when we got unqualified with findings and we missed our clean audit. So we're back on track. But thank you very much for your insight. And as we had said before, that we'd appreciate that if you see red bells, don't wait until the end of the process. Engage the department immediately because you are able to detect those, so that then we don't use the stick and we are seen as a ho-ho. But we should also show the working relationship between yourselves and departments and ourselves to ensure that you do scrutinize deeply what is supposed to be done, but also we need to work together to ensure that there is compliance and that everybody does look for green of the AG. I have a clean audit. But thank you very much. Have a blessed day. Madam members, our next presentation will be from SANSA, South African National Space Agency.
Thank you.
Good morning. Yes, you are most welcome. Team Sansa. Just to quickly introduce the committee, my name is Lindwe Masego, chairperson of the committee. Honorable Lotriet.
Good morning. I'm Annelie Lotriet and a member of the committee.
Nogozola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
And Nick Kornoff, also a member.
Chantal King, member of the committee. Solofalo Mutsiri, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Agnes Tuck, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Tanjie Mpulo, member of the committee.
Good morning, Dr. Susan Temrekwayo, member of this committee, thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Nitsami, do you want to introduce your team? And then...
Madam Chair, good morning.
My
name is Vali van Bouillon. I'm a board member of SANSIF since 2014 and representing the newly elected chairperson that's unfortunately unable to attend today. This is Mrs. Kakana. So apologies for her not being present today. Our team from management would be our CEO, Dr. Val Mutsami, on my left, our CFO, Bulebo Puno, and also our Executive Director for Space Program, Amal Khatri. Our presentation will be led by our CEO, Dr. Val.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation on the 2017-18 Annual Report. Just from a very high level in terms of the performance, we had 20 targets outlined in the 2017-18 annual performance plan. Of the 20 targets, we've achieved 17, and that equates to a success factor for 85% in terms of the targets achieved. There were essentially three targets that we had not achieved, and I'll just put those down. The number of national high-impact products and services. So out of the five that we had indicated as our targets, only four was fully achieved. The fifth one was partially completed. So as per the, you know, the audit framework, if you didn't achieve it, if partial achievement is a non-achievement. In terms of the ring-fenced fund, SANSA had projected to achieve a non-ring-fenced fund of 251 million. We actually secured 235. So there we fell a little short, but I think it was still a significant achievement. The third one was the estimated monetized impact from space-related activities. That was not done on the understanding that the DST has already earlier in the year, previous financial year, contracted the CSR to undertake a socioeconomic benefits assessment study. And this would obviously cross with the monetized impact study that we would have done internally within Sensor. So just in terms of the performance highlights for Sensor, we produced 4 very high impact national products and services. We also produced 3 government policy support tools in the year. And from a research perspective, we've published over 20 research papers in accredited journals. And that equates to 2.7 papers per researcher. And if you consider the fact that the national average per research is just about 1.5, that's a significant achievement from our perspective. We also supported close on 4,400 satellite passes over our space operations center. And the actual downtime was actually 0 minutes over all the entire year. That means we had no maintenance downtime. It was fully operational. Okay. From a space outreach and awareness perspective, we've engaged over 23,000 learners. And for in terms of postgraduate support, bursaries and scholarships, we've supported 75 students. And there was a sort of a focus on previously disadvantaged individuals. So of the 75 students, 78% were from previously disadvantaged institutions. We also, through mainly the satellite development program, supported 62 direct jobs through those programs. And then in terms of contracting to the local industry, because one of the core mandates of Sensor is to support and help develop the local industry, so we've issued contracts to the value of 78 million. We also have a targeted focus. It's small at the moment, but we're seeing how we can grow that. There's a targeted focus on small and medium enterprises. So of the 78 million, 16.2 was geared towards the small and medium enterprises. In May last year, we successfully hosted the ISRSC, which is the International Symposium on Remote Sensing of the Environment. And we saw delegates coming from over 56 countries. It was a huge success from our perspective. And then we also, from a non-space perspective, we approached by the South African police to help in detection of hidden weapons in the Western Cape area, especially along the coastline. So they figured out that there was a catchment of arms that was hidden. And they approached Sensor, and they couldn't find it, and they approached Sensor to come up with new techniques in terms of what we do with the magnetic services we provide, to see whether we could detect it. Unfortunately, we didn't find the weapons, but we found many other interesting things. from a space operations perspective, it was also a very busy year for us. We supported 15 launches. So you recall previously what we indicated is if there's a launch from the US or French Guiana, those launch vehicles must pass over Africa. And very often, they lose sight of the launch vehicle and we take control. So we provide the support services from our center, the launch operation center. And what also happens is often the ejection of the payload of the satellite happens over our footprint. And we switch on the satellite, we test the satellite, we do the in-orbit testing of those satellites, and we pass the certificates back on to the original owner. And we did 19 transfer orbits last year. what is probably not included in the report, we also managed to locate 2 satellites that was launched by a European service provider. These were communication satellites. We're talking about 5 to 6 ton satellites. We also won the bid to host the Space Ops 2020. So there's a Space Ops conference that happens biannually. And this is the conference where all the space operators in the world convene and converge to discuss what's the latest technologies in regards to space operations. So we're actually proud that we actually won the bid to host that in 2020. So this will happen in May 2020, and it will be here in Cape Town at the International Convention Center. We also received a clean audit from the Sensor perspective. So those are the highlights from Santa perspective. And in the report, the annual report, we provide the high-level impact in terms of what Santa's impact with the local sector has been. And then in each of the programs, we went into a little bit more detail as to what the achievements were. So I'm not going to rehash that. And then just from a financial perspective, our income, our parliamentary grant at the moment is $131 million. Okay. And that accounts for 30% of our revenue. Our ring-fence grants, in terms of additional income that's secured, was $214.16 million. And that accounts to about 40% of our income. And then we have what is called exchange transactions. That is about $87 million. So these are services that we provide to the international industry for which we get an income, like the space operations, the launch support, the Nova testing, and so on. So that was $87.8 million. But then if you go on the expenditure side, our biggest cost, or a significant cost, is the employee cost, which is about $110 million. And just to make the comparison, if your parliamentary grant is $131 million and your employee cost is $110 million, that essentially means you've got 20 million rand. And our operating cost for SANSA is $140 million, and our capital expenditure in terms of the satellite build program and so on is just about $110 million. So a large part of the income that we make is over and above the parliamentary grant, but that's helping to keep SANSA sustainable at the moment. Okay. And just in terms of our employee demographics, we have 182 staff complement, 116 of which are African, 16 of which are colored, 10 are Indian, and 41 are white. And so that's roughly still below the racial demographics, but I think we have improved over the years and sort of getting closer to the target. And then just in terms of the gender distribution, we have 111 male and 72 female. It's still a 60 sort of 40 split, but I think there's a slight improvement from the last financial year where there's a few more females that have been achieved. And just to also point out that in the executive team, we have a 7-member executive team, 4 of which are female and 3 are male, including myself. And then just on the implementation challenges, I think when I put the finance slide up, the issue is around the parliamentary grant specifically. It's not adequate to cover the full operations of SANSA. So the big focus for the executive team and the rest of SANSA is on fundraising. And as you can see, 50% of the funds are non-ring-fenced, and we also go on the international market, whereas about 30-odd% is also accrued through services that we provide. As a consequence, because of the funding challenges, we're not able to implement the full mandate. So global navigation, satellite services, and telecommunications is something that we haven't fully focused on. We do have a new strategic framework and plan that we have put on the table that includes these elements, but funding still remains a challenge. Okay. And the board also approved a business case for global navigation satellite services in the telecom sector in March this year. So we do have approved business cases to take that forward, but we'll have to find the funding to do that. And then specifically the challenges related to the EOSAT-1, there are some implementation challenges. You would have seen in the media that DNEL is currently going through a massive restructuring process. And the prime contractor for EOSAT-1 is DNEL itself. And they see space as a non-core business for DNEL. So we have to work around that aspect. And so there's a discussion with the DST, the minister itself. And what we are looking at is several options as to how to ensure that the mission is completed. And so the financial aspects is also another challenge. So what we are doing at the moment is currently working through, I think we've got 3 or 4 different options as to how we can reduce the cost to completion of the satellite and also the timeline, keep within the timelines. One of the other challenges which relates to the implementation of EOSAT-1, when SANSA was initially established, in the structure there was a need for an engineering division, but that was not formally implemented. I think we're only now going through the process of changing that decision to have now a formal space engineering division. So what we've done as of the 1st of April, the beginning of this financial year, we started to pay the space engineering staff incentive from our parliamentary grant. That signals that we are now formally embedding the space engineering division within Sensor, as opposed to it being paid out of the EOSET 1 contract, which is not the ideal. Okay. It also sort of signals to the space engineering staff that EOSET 1 is the main priority, which is not the case. It's actually satellite engineering in general, whether it's EOSET 1 or a CubeSat project, that's where the focus of the space engineering, and also the industry development, is a key focus of the space engineering division. Related to the implementation challenges is we've gone through, in terms of making Sensor sustainable, we started to formalize a number of partnerships. So the BRICS partnership, there's a focus on remote sensing constellation. That hasn't been completely resolved. There's some issues politically inside the BRICS nations, which has held us back in terms of signing this agreement. But we've, in the last few months, in fact in July, we signed an agreement with the UAE Space Agency. We've also signed an agreement or renewed an agreement with AZAL, which is the Algerian Space Agency. And you would have seen in the press, we've signed the agreement with the Indian Space Research Organization, which is the Indian Space Agency, in front of our heads of state. And that was during the BRICS meeting in June or July. A key aspect from our perspective is the, due to the limited funding levels, is limited support to local industry. I did indicate that we've contracted to the value of 78 million rand, but that is, for us, is not the optimal. If you look at the mandate of Sensor, we are meant to support and develop the local industry as opposed to implementing some of these activities internally. So we have to have an outward focus with regards to the industry. And then the road ahead, we have developed a new 5-year strategic plan, and we've had this discussion with the minister. So the new 5-year strategic plan sees a greater focus on Africa as opposed to just South Africa. Because if we are the leading agency in Africa, why not look at the growth potential within Africa than just South Africa? Because there's a great need for space applications, products and services in Africa as opposed to just South Africa. So that provides growth potential for us. We're also looking in the new strategic plan, focus on the GNSS and telecoms, which has been in neglected areas since Sensor was established. As I said, we did have the discussion with the DST and the minister, and as you would know, Chair, there is this now the new science and technology white paper the minister has just released, which is now going through a phase of receiving public comments, and I think there's a summit. November, where there will be some inputs from the public consultation. But what the minister has indicated, she wants to see an alignment of the strategic plan with a new white paper, as opposed to a standalone. So she wants to ensure that it talks to the white paper. So we're just going to ensure that that happens. Implementation of a financial sustainability strategy. So we've introduced a financial sustainability strategy as to what Sensor needs to do to ensure that we become more financially sustainable. For example, as I said, the parliamentary grant in this financial is 138 million. We just received, I think there's a notification from the DST, and I think this affects all government departments. There's a budget cut. So we will be taking a budget cut in the subsequent years. So if that trend continues, Sensor cannot remain financially sustainable. But that doesn't mean we have to fold our arms and wait for government to come with the funding. We need to find other means and mechanisms to make Sensor more sustainable. And so we've started some engagements with, for example, the Development Bank of Southern Africa, CEDA, and the IDCs, to see how we can look at sourcing some funding from these institutions to look at space activities or initiatives. And I can say that there's a positive response from these institutions wanting to invest in the sector. I know, for example, IDC has just approved one of the requests that we made to do a feasibility study for a satellite project. And if that turns out positive, we could see more investments from the IDC. Internally within Sensor, we've also gone through a whole change management process, right from the top executive level right to the bottom. This is still being rolled out, and that's to essentially look at the culture of the organization and to align it with the new strategic plan that we've put on the table as well. And we did go through a structural realignment, and the focus there was on the efficiency and to be more cost-effective. So for give you an example, because of the financial pressures, if we see there's a turnover of staff, we don't automatically just go and fill that position. We have a look and see as to whether it's critical and make an assessment and to see whether it's, we can do it somewhat differently and use additional resources that we or resources we have internally in terms of. And one of the big things that has emerged in the last year is a bigger focus on marketing and strategic partnerships and communications. And we felt that since the inception of SANSA, probably stakeholder relationships has been one of the weak points and the financial sustainability. So we're trying to address both of these issues, and I think we're starting to make some inroads. So we did have a National Science for Development Week in March, and that was well attended, and we tried to get an assessment from the community as to what they needed, and I think this is the first time essentially we've done at that level, and I think there was a very positive response. So Chair, that's the presentation I wanted to put. I'm assuming the document is read, but just one slide that I've added, which is not in your pack, and this was came out last week on Thursday. So last week was the International Astronautical Congress in Bremen, Germany. It was the biggest one so far. 6,300 participants from across the world attended. On the sides, as part of the International Institute of Space Law, they run this Manfred Lax Moot Court Law. So essentially, students from universities get to argue a case. They're given a case, essentially, to go and fight. And the students then taken, I think it's the High Court judge in Bremen, Germany, that presided over the hearings. And our students from the University of Pretoria won. Okay. So the students, you'll see them on either side. The lady in the center was essentially the last year's team, and she was a runner-up as part of that team. They came out second last year. And she tutored the guys this year, which is on either side of her, and they won the competition. But I thought it was important that South Africa, our students, are ranking right up there with the rest of the world. And we also won a few other prizes in the IAF. I think we came out second for one of the students from Stellenbosch University. So we've done quite well. So I thought I should just share that success factor story with you. Thank you, Chair, for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Musami, and Mr. Van Zijunt, welcome to the new board. We wish them all the best. Can extend our gratitude also and our congratulations to the others, Chairperson Kakana. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will do so.
Thank you. Dr. Musami also choose just to congratulate SANSA on the clean audit. Towards this, around this time of the year, we all become worried about the departments that we oversee, if they will make it to the clean audit. So shows that you do ensure that what your APPs and your budget are aligned, but also the oversight within the administration of SANSA itself, beside the DST overseeing SANSA, but the oversight within SANSA itself is done, and also the committee doing their bit and best in ensuring the oversight responsibility. Thank you very much once again, honorable members. You now, Honorable Dr. Lutrit, Dr. Tembekwayo, Honorable Tak, Musidi, King Goronov, and Ndongeni. That one. Tak, If you're not, I won't take your second round. I'm joking. Honorable Dr. Lutrit.
Thank you, Chair. I was just wondering, referring to the neglected areas, the GNSS and telecoms, and the fact that we have limited resources at this point, does SANSA in any way communicate, collaborate with the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services? Because your work is critical to telecoms, and that is one of the important growth points that we have to have in the world in which we live.
You, Honorable Dr. Tembewai.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I've got only two issues here, and then the first one is about racial distribution versus gender distribution. I just would like to know whether it's possible for you to outline this male-female gender distribution, not generalized as it is right now. I'm interested in knowing how many, the percentage, you have here racial distribution, employee demographics, African, colored, Indian, white, where does this 39.3% of female representation come from? Because it's just a round figure, but we don't know the concentration thereof. And just to make a comment, from your committee, gender is not well balanced. From today's committee present here, it's not well balanced. There's only one lady. Please address that when you come here in future. Just try to address that so that we don't have to ask questions like this. And disability, if it's possible. And then the second one is based on the space engineering division, which was mentioned as not being established. But at the same time, it's not mentioned under the road ahead. I mean, this is the road ahead, which means it's a five-year strategic plan. And I just would like to know, since it's not yet established, why is it not included here specifically under your five-year plan? Because according to me, it's very important. It needs to be established. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kutereba. Honorable Mfulo Tidang, you are not. Honorable Tak.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am on page 2 at bullet 5. My question there, you are saying there you supported 75 students, 78% PDIs. My question is, how is selection done in the 75 students? Are they from all provinces? And I include the 62 direct jobs also there. I would like to know, is these PDIs from all provinces or just from around, maybe in the Western Cape, because that's the idea that I'm getting, it. It's in the Western Cape. And you are saying on page 3 that you won the Bedros Space Ops 2020, and it's going to be in Cape Town. It's not in the report, but I remember you mentioned it. So I want to know why in Cape Town, because when you have such an event, it does influence a lot of things in the specific place where you're going to host it. So, and for me, I would like to see all the provinces being influenced by the hosting of this event. But I would like to know specifically why then Cape Town. And I will understand, although I'm from the Northern Cape, that it's only the Western Cape, if have to be. But then you'll have to make me understand, because we've got 9 provinces. The third question is, what are your key outcomes of SANSA structural realignment to date?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chuck, Honorable Mutsiri.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think with your points on the road ahead, you talk about a stronger focus on marketing and strategic partnerships and communication. While there's an appreciation that that is not your core function in terms of communications and whatnot, but you've also alluded to the fact that there's going to be budget cuts. And when you talk about implementation of financial stability, you only list the Development Bank of South Africa, SIDA, and IDC. What the private sector, what is your relationship with the private sector, and how can you tap into those, and also just to market the entity to the general public? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable King.
Okay, on slide, okay, not slide, your road heading as well, your strategic plan for the 5 years. Last year it was also highlighted that you were busy with the strategic plan, and you have reduced now from 7 to 5. Which key elements were then aligned to each other to reduce, to have effected the reduction from 7 to 5 in your new plan? And then also, you highlighted risk factors in your report. Just for sake of clarity, what measures have been put in place to mitigate against these risk factors, which was highlighted in your report? Thank you.
Honorable Coroner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on EOSAT 1, last year, you know, you gave us the figure of the shortfall. Just remind me with regard to that figure, and if it's still standing at that amount, because it was quite a concern to the committee that you should, you know, at that stage I think you were reporting that you're going to stop the project. Mm-hmm. Is that the case, and or have you just extended the end time for that project, and how is it affecting, you know, SANSA, if that thing is not completing, you know, as you hoped previously? And then just on your stakeholders, you know, on your annual report, you've got a list, I think, of about 29. But I just look at the international ones. Which countries do you regard as the most powerful in terms of partnerships, or most valuable for South Africa in terms of partnerships?
Thank you, Honorable Ndongeni.
Thanks, Chair. I've been covered by Honorable Tuck about the outcomes of your alignment and the Space Engineering Director. So I'm covered.
Thank you very much. On the implementation challenges, the limited support to local industry, what is that limited? How far do you support the local industry, and what would be the ideal support that you'd want to see? Thank you. Dr. Mukami or Dr. Van Bijon?
Thank you, Chair. So I'll just go question by question in terms of what has been asked by the honourable members. First of all, thank you for the comments around the clean audit, and I think actually should extend the thanks to the CFO, which has been instrumental in ensuring the clean audits. But it's a team effort as well. But your team has been at the centre of it. In terms of the neglected areas and the limited resources, have we been engaging with the DTPS? Yes, we have. So from a DTPS perspective, they've been trying to craft a national strategy for telecommunications. And so we've been in the room in terms of seeing how we can assist, because we have some experience in terms of developing the space strategy, policy, and so on. And so I think that process is still ongoing, and so we're part of the committee that's helping to develop that. And there are also some options in terms of what we could do in terms of securing South Africa's telecom satellite as well, which is what DTPS is currently considering. But I should also mention, from a GNSS perspective, Global Navigation Satellite Services, the other key department is the Department of Transport. And I think that it actually raises an important point. because even though our line department is the Department of Science and Technology, the SANSA was not established just for DST. It is an agency of all government. And so it's an agency of DTPS and the Department of Transport and so on. And so that conversation and connection, and I think with the DST colleague in the room, we have been engaging those various departments in terms of bringing them in as well. So that has happened, yes. In terms of the racial distribution versus gender distribution, I think if, I just need to, there's a page 101. Let me just see if I've got it correct. There's a table that gives the actual breakdown. On page 101, it actually gives you the breakdown of males and females per the racial category, whether it's African, colored, Indian, and white. So it is actually in the annual report. So, it's not in the presentation, but it is in the report. And that's all. That also cuts to the gender balance. So just in terms of the gender balance of...
I'm sorry, Dr. Musam, is this document?
Yes.
That was put in your pigeonhole. If you can just note the page so that when you get it, you can look at that page. Page 101.
101.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a table.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate because the board chair should have been here and she's female. We have one of, as I said, I have, in terms of the executive team, we have four females. One is in Geneva at the moment, unfortunately. The other one, because of the sustainability issue, we have a key client going to one of our sites, and she has to be there to, and one of the contracts is currently at risk, so she has to be there to defend the contract, so she couldn't make it. And the third one is also currently busy, our executive director for enterprise services. There's a lot of issues back home that she's trying to resolve. So unfortunately, our female colleagues are very busy. It's not that we didn't bring it. The road ahead, why not include the space engineering establishment? I think the point I made was that we've now embedded the space engineering into the SANSA structure formally by ensuring that they paid out of the parliamentary grant as of the 1st of April, which is this financial year. The reporting period is for the previous financial year, so it's not included in the previous financial year. So I put it in the road ahead in terms of Satellite Engineering Division, but that was essentially leading to this. So it's not in the report, but I've alluded to it. Where the students are from, so in terms of the demographics and where the students are located, actually I did get the full stats. I've got it here with me on my computer. They gave me the exact breakdown, even at which university the students are have been supported and so on. So I can, immediately after this meeting, I can hand it over on the stick and provide you that information. And then in terms of the key deliverables around the structural realignment, so just in terms of what has been achieved, the structural realignment, first of all, when I arrived at the agency, a number of the executives were not reporting to me. They were reporting to another executive, and I thought that was not appropriate, and through the board discussion and a decision that we then took to the board, as of the 1st of April last year, the executives reported directly to the CEO. The other thing that I found which didn't quite go well with me was that there was a number of managers that were reporting to me, like communications and what's the other one, stakeholder engagement, and that was me very uncomfortable that the executives are not reporting to me, but managers at a lower level report. It creates an impression that the executives are somewhat below the managers, and so we had to. So those, that was one of the key aspects of the structural realignment. One of the things that we've started, I haven't completely concluded, is on our HR division. We do have a slight misalignment in terms of the number of people that are employed in HR. I think we oversubscribe. Normally it's 1 to 50 people, one HR representative to 50 to 100 people in an organization. We have about 10 at the moment, 484. So if you do the ratios, it's overly skewed. So we're trying to see how to reset the HR division. And it does affect us significantly because you can't do change management without having a properly functioning HR division. So, you know, it creates its own internal challenges. So that's currently being fixed at the moment in terms of the key outcomes of the realignment. Cape Town, the space ops. Cape Town as opposed to Durban or Northern Cape for that matter. So if you look at, well, firstly, I should mention that the Cape Town Tourism Board came in and they put in huge support for this bid, and they also put in some additional funding on the table in terms of tourism and so on. But I think the key reason as to why we went with Cape Town was that if you look at the facilities, like Hotech and so on, they're actually based in the Western Cape. And your SKA office is actually here in the Western Cape. And the space office is very key to those kind of infrastructure which is located here. So you want to showcase the infrastructure that's in the Western Cape. So when they come here, you can take them to the SKA office, you can take them to Hotech. And that was the primary reason. The other option was to have it actually in Pretoria, but the space operations facility is so remote, it's 80 kilometers away. To actually drive there and back every day was actually, from a practical point of view, was not going to work. So that's one of the reasons why we went with the Cape Town bit. Strategic partnerships, sorry, I would have normally given my colleagues to answer, but let me just see how far I can go, then I can hand it over. Marketing and strategic partnerships and communications. The relationship with the private sector, and I think it goes hand in hand with another question that is asked, is which you asked, Chair, which is limited support, to what extent? I mean, as I said, the support we've given was about 78 million to the local industry. And you ask sort of, what would be the ideal? If you go and back and interrogate the national space strategy, and if you look at the targets, 2017, if my memory serves me correct, the ideal budget for the space program should have been, I think it's 1.7 billion. If you had to have an effective space program, we're talking about 131 million. As opposed to 1.7 billion. Okay. And in fact, if we had invested in that, and the you know, the analysis shows that if we had invested that amount, the return on investment would have been 9-1. So we could have gotten much more, but because we've limited investment, the return on investment is also limited. So the private sector suffers as a consequence of that as well. So it's limited support in terms of funding, which has a net effect of reducing what our industrial capability is. So we've tried with whatever funding we have to contract the industry as much as possible. So the major share of the satellite engineering project, for example, is to the industry, it's not to SANSA itself. Okay. So there is that relationship, and we've now, both from a space engineering perspective and from the Earth observation perspective, we started to engage our industry. In fact, about a month ago, we had a breakfast meeting with our space applications industry to say, what do you want from SANSA? You know, what are the bottlenecks? And so we're starting to engage much more. So there is that communication and engagement with the industry, and I think it's increasing as we go. The general public, as I said, we've in terms of school kids, there's 23,000 kids that we've engaged. But if you look at the media releases, I mean, in terms of we took a sample of stakeholders out there, and we found out that close to 80% of the people know what we're doing. So 80% might be acceptable, but I think we can do much better. So if you look at what our SANSA has featured in the media, we've been quite prominent in the media. But there's still some work being done. So you will see that we've now launched a new website, okay, which is completely different from the older one. And that's to be more engaging with the communities as well. Okay. There was a question around the strategic plan. So we've now have, in the previous year, 7 goals, and now we're looking at 5 goals going forward. And so what's the difference in terms of the 2 goals? So if you look at the current annual report with 7 goals, there are 5 goals that are more externally orientated, and 2 of them, goals 6 and 7, are internally orientated. Now, if you look in a strategic plan, it should not be, we're talking strategic, not operational. So operational should not be internally focused. It should be externally focused and very strategic. Okay. The 2 goals that we have, goal 6 and 7, is more about creating high performance, looking at the demographics. I mean, like the issue around the racial demographics and the gender distribution, we report to the Department of Labor in any case. Okay. So should we be including that here as a target? It's actually legislated. We have to do it. It shouldn't be something that we set ourselves as a target. It must be done. And so we do report on those. So there was a question as to whether we should include those operational aspects as part of the strategic plan. And so we said, let's separate strategic versus operational. And that's how we managed to reduce from 7 goals to 5 goals. I just need to check the risk factors. But I think the big risk factor was around Yusuf one. I'll give Amal to answer that one. I'll ask you to come back on that one. And there was a question around ESET 1. International, which are the main partners? I think the big partners that we have actually formed a formal relationship with is the UAE. There's a huge interest in working with South Africa. They have a huge budget. I mean, their annual budget is $6 billion. Okay. And they have huge ambitions, Mars, and even their own local space program in terms of building satellites. We have the capabilities, not necessarily the resources, so we can share and see how we can benefit of that. Another big partner that's not formalized as yet, but we just had a meeting last week in Bremen, Germany, is with the European Space Agency. So we're having a workshop next year, early next year, probably in January, February. And we're looking at some of the models that ESA has with Europe. So they have, for example, the business incubation centers that they set up in many European countries, where they look at new startups, where ESA puts in the IP, and new companies can come and grab the IP and commercialize that, and actually spin it out into other non-space sector industries. And so that's proven very, very successful in Europe. And so we're seeing whether we can emulate some of that model. And ESA is even prepared to give us some of the IP, access to the IP, to see whether we could commercialize them. And there's no exchange of funding, which is the good thing. And then we're also exploring some other initiatives, like what is called ESA Labs at the universities. They do exactly the same thing, but it's geared towards students, to see whether students can look at them. So that's a very promising relationship. And then the DLR is also another good partner that we've been working with for a while. And so you would know, I think last year we reported, actually it's in this report, the space debris tracking at Sutherland came because of the relationship with DLR. And the discussion we had last week with the DLR is that there's a lot more that's coming through, like space, weather, we see a lot of collaboration points. So there's strong points of synergy with these partners. So I've mentioned the top three. And I think, Chair, you asked about the local industry support, which I think I've answered in terms of why. And then on the EOSAT one, I think I'll get Amal to answer that. So there was the issue around the risk, and how we're mitigating the risk, and the shortfalls, whether it still remains a shortfall.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee. Let me make myself comfortable. So, yes, at the last committee meeting, we did indicate there's a shortfall in funding for the satellite development program. If you recall correctly, the full acquisition phase of the satellite is about 1.4 billion rands. And the acquisition phase is essentially from the design phase right to the flight model and to launching the satellite in space. To date, we've spent just over 300 million rand on the satellite development, and you can see there's a gap in terms of the funding itself. The satellite, the whole acquisition process, there's various segments that we're developing. Our key focus at the moment is obviously the satellite segment. And to build a satellite, it's going to cost around $695 for the satellite. The rest of the cost is in fact for the ground segment, the data segment that we have to develop, including launching the satellite. So there's a cost attached to it. And we have to, you know, we have to be honest, launching is expensive. You know, you're essentially buying a rocket and you're sending a satellite in space. And the current cost of launching is between $20,000 to $50,000 per kilogram. So, you know, launching can be in excess of, you know, close to 400 million rands, particularly with the current exchange rate. So, so that's the first challenge, the funding. The other risk that we have on the program is the risk that the CEO pointed out under Danel Dynamics. Space Tech is the contracted party. And if you recall correctly, Space Tech is essentially previous Sunspace employees. And it's a bit unfortunate that under the Danel environment, the non-core businesses in space, unfortunately, see it as non-core businesses. They need to redesign their business model, and space, unfortunately, doesn't seem to be on their long-term vision. This, however, creates also an opportunity to some degree to see how do we reorganize the space industry to be more suited to support the broader space industry development. So for the completion of EOSAT 1, we have to first stabilize, obviously, that environment, we need the funding, and to mitigate this risk, or particularly on the funding side, we have to come up with alternative options. The satellite that we originally designed, its intention was to be a world-class satellite, to essentially competing with all other countries. And it's quite a unique design. If you look at the similar satellites of a similar class, they are, in fact, you know, sometimes double the size. And I give you as an example, the Chinese are building a similar satellite. There's 600 people working on this project, 600 people. We have about 50 people working on the same satellite development. So it tells you something about our capability. And this is the issue for me personally, is that how do we keep this capability so we have this high skills and we can develop an effective space program that will support the country. Because space has socioeconomic benefits. We're not building a satellite because it's cool to build a satellite, or the engineers would like to do that, but there's a purpose for the satellite itself. And, you know, we don't want to go into a discussion, but there's food security, disaster management, you know, water bodies, monitoring of water bodies. There are many things that we gain out of the satellite development. So there is the business case for it. However, we have to rethink the approach to the satellite development. So currently, as we speak, in fact, my team are engaging with the broader space industry to say, collectively as a broader space industry, what is it that we can do to build a satellite, okay, that meets the requirements of the user, but slightly different. And the difference is the fact that the satellite we wanted to build essentially had a bus, which is the platform in which you can host your payload. So it's like a big camera in space. Maybe we need to do it differently because of the limited funding. One of the elements we wanted to do in the satellite is to have full redundancy on it, and redundancy also makes the satellite heavy. So, you know, you have something like a reaction wheel, and a reaction wheel essentially assists you to maneuver the satellite. So we have two in there. One is we buy and one is we make. And the idea of making is that if we can design and make these things ourselves, you know, there's a benefit to the country because we have our own unique products. So we have to take some hard decisions in terms of looking at a very linear satellite development, which has probably some redundancy, but not as much redundancy. So this will bring the cost down of the satellite. If you bring down, obviously, the mass of the satellite itself, then the cost will come down in terms of launching as well. So there's a great deal of initiative at the moment to try and do this here. We really want a truly South African operational satellite. I think we were ambitious, because we wanted to do something that's really world-class. But I think what we can do is we can take the learning from there, redesign our satellite, and build something that will, in fact, get into space and serve our needs. And then start planning for future satellites for the country, where we can start building in more advanced systems into those satellites. In fact, you know, to some extent, our capability is well-known internationally. We are currently working on a proposal, for example, with Algeria. They're looking at a nano satellite constellation. And I think you've heard of ZAQ2, which is our first satellite for AIS. And AIS is to detect, essentially, ship detection. Now, we must think of the satellite program broadly. And as the CEO highlighted, from a satellite engineering perspective, we're not only EOSAT 1, but we are satellite engineering. And we need to look at various missions that support the needs of the country. And you know, if you actually, if you look at one of the matrices that we have, you'll see just about every department, you know, every government department benefits from satellite imagery. The power in those images is phenomenal. You know, they say a picture can tell 1,000 words, more than 1,000 words. We're talking about the depth of information that's coming out of it. I think this will empower us to make sure that we have a sustainable country. If you look at the sustainable development goals, for instance, all of that fits into this year. Hence, the risks that we currently have, we have to do everything possible to try and manage those risks. So yes, we have to change our direction a bit. We have to stabilize the space industry by coming up with a plan of retaining this current staff. But these are the challenges. And I think that didn't sound so good. But I know that's probably 12 o'clock. What we're doing from our side is we're looking at re-looking at the whole program. We do have a board meeting at end of this month as well. We're going to present some new options. We don't want to stop the program. We want to continue with the satellite development program. It may mean we take a different route and leverage the current investment in applying it in a different way.
Thank you very much for those responses that you have given, and also the presentation that you had. We know that you're reporting for the previous financial year, but while you are here, we want to know how compliant is your building, taking from the tragedy that happened in Gauteng. So as part of our oversight, we want to know how compliant is where you operate from, where you are housed. Just to that.
Thank you, Chair. So we have Sensors 3 sites, one in Pretoria, which is at the Innovation Hub, and I think that's fairly sound. But I should also mention that we have been in discussion with some developers for a new building, which is just in the same facility. So that might be a possibility, but we're just assessing what that implications are. In terms of our space operations facility in Hartbeespoort, that's a national key point, and I don't think we have any problems there. The same with our Sansa Space Science. We actually owned the building and maintain it ourselves. I mean, we have our own facilities managers on both sides. And so all of the work is done in-house in terms of maintaining the quality. We follow the ISO standards in terms of an environmental safety issues as well.
Thank you very much. It's something that you just need to ensure. And also some government buildings tend to be neglected and taken advantage of. So it's just one of our concerns. But we'd like to thank you for the presentation and the response to the questions that were posed by members. And also congratulate you once again for the clean audit. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Thank you.
I think there are drinks right there at the back which you can take on your way out.
Coming, we don't have their report. Huh? 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 Huh Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable members, and welcome to Team NRF. I just want to apologize for the documents that were not here yet. And our administrator Tando, he had lost his mom, so he only came back yesterday actually. So he's trying to catch up with him. But we can look at on the screen. We can continue with the presentation. And I think earlier on I also forgot to also that Honorable Kakana also lost his dad yesterday. So we extend our condolences to all of them. I'm not sure this period is just like you can run away. So many deaths, you know. I mean, the day the minister died, we were burying one other member from Mpumalanga, and then the minister. Now it's in the Eastern Cape, and families of members, I'm telling you, it's just scary. But thank you very much for coming. Just to introduce the members here, to those who do not know them. My name is Lindwe Masego. I'm the chairperson of the committee. Dr. Lotri.
I'm just checking it's afternoon already. Good afternoon. I'm Annelie Lotri and a member of the committee.
Nobusola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
Nick Kornoff, member, and if I leave early, I've been called to a meeting in the chief whip's office, so it's not in. That I'm not in support.
Good morning, Chantel King, member of the committee.
Dumelang, I am Tsulufelo Mutsidi, member of the committee.
Good morning, good afternoon, I'm Agnes Stack, a member of the committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Tandwe Mfulo, member of the committee.
Good afternoon, Dr. Tembekwayo, member of committee on science and technology. Thank you.
Dr. Kuvela and Dr. Boko, you can introduce your team.
Chairperson and honorable members, my name is Malapo Kuvela. I work for Dr. Boko and yourself.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and the members of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. I've just started now as the new chairperson of the NRF board. Thank you.
Say your name.
Dr. Nompumelelo Boko.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, as well as honorable members. My name is Bishan Singh. I'm the CFO at the National Research Foundation. Thank you.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Petwe Matutu. I'm the group executive for strategy, planning, and partnerships at the NRF. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members and Chairperson. I'm Gamson Pele. I'm the Deputy CEO for Research and Innovation Support and Advancement.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. Beverly Demons, Group Executive for Science Engagement and Corporate Relations.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Kidirang Wakhile, Group Executive, Human Resources and Legal Services at the NRF.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Clifford Momani, and I am the Deputy Chief Executive of the NRF, responsible for National Research Infrastructure Platforms.
Good afternoon. My name is Rosa Caesar. I'm from the Department of Science and Technology.
My name is Pumelele Yahoo from the PST. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this introduction. Welcome you. Welcome the new board. We worked very well with the previous board, and we know that we will have a good relationship also with the new board. And wish you all the luck, Dr. Gogo. Also congratulate NRF for the beautiful ceremony and the recognition of those who deserved the awards that was held last week in PE. Thank you very much and congratulations. Without much waste of time, Dr. Bokok, over to you.
Good afternoon once more, the members of the Portfolio Committee. Today, as was indicated, that I'm leading the team, the executive team from the NRF, we will be giving or presenting the 2017-2018 annual report. Of course, the report emanates from the work that was done under the previous board of the NRF. But I'll, as the new board, we are very much looking forward to working with the committee and making sure that we take the NRF to another level. And then having said that, when you look at the fourth industrial revolution, I think we want to position NRF as the knowledge hub for research and development in South Africa. Hence, we are very much excited that we are coming in on board when there are all these new developments in the country and looking at the policy development as well as some of the regulations that are required to really leverage on what the fourth industrial revolution is about to bring for the economic growth of the country. Having said that, I think it was only proper to also congratulate the Honourable Chair for your achievements with your attainment of the LLB degree. We are very much pleased and would like to congratulate you as the NRF board as well as the executive committee. And I think now, just to move on, looking at the time, I'd like to invite the CEO of the NRF, Dr. Mulapo Kobela, to take us through the presentation, which is the business for today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Boka. Dr. Kobela.
Chairperson, honorable members, if I go too fast, Chair and honorable members, please rein me in. Stop me, club me, whatever it is that is required. And apologies that you don't have the physical copies. So I'll try not to take time from the discussion, but I'll try and see if we can also make up some of the time that we might have lost. Very quickly, during the term of the board, and we're hoping as we go into the future, there are two key matters that have seized the attention of the organization. And the first is really is about accelerating our transformation agenda. And for us, Chairperson, transformation is not just an issue of race and gender. It's got to be about how we use knowledge, what knowledge is valued. Therefore, the knowledge enterprise itself needs to be reflected on and to ensure that we undertake the sort of research that actually advances the social and economic development of our country and society. Similarly, all important matter of ensuring the relationship between science and society, and not just about scientists talking down at people, but also how society in turn informs the work of science. So that's a dialectic relationship, and that's a mandate issue which will be coming forward once the NRF bill has been enacted. And lastly, is about building the type of organization that lives the values of not just of the NRF, but lives the values of our own constitution, so that when we are tasked with accounting, we are in a position to talk about that this is who we are, and this is what we hold dear. The second matter is really around operational financial sustainability. We have been coming to you, and we will be reporting again around a thin line that you sometimes reach. You sometimes reach a tipping point where if you're not careful, you enter into a slippery slope of no return. And we've got to be careful that some of the things that are happening to institutions on the rest of the continent don't happen to us, both in terms of our ability to perform what is expected of us and the way in which resources are allocated for the things that really matter. And so these are some of the issues that we'll be talking about, and we are looking forward I almost said Minister Nene, Chairperson, Minister Mbuweni's medium-term budget policy statement, because one of the big issues is around the long-term plans for renewal, replacement, and acquisition of essential national infrastructure that sustains our national system. If we don't constantly renew, it's very 1 minute the thing will just simply cease to work, and it'll cost you more to replace it than if you were to be maintaining it. So these are some of the priority issues. And during the period, and we made a deliberate choice, Chair, because we're not sure when the President will be getting Parliament to rise for the end. And so we're not sure whether we'll have an opportunity of coming back here again. So we did a deliberate reflection. It ties to the term of the board. It also looks at the term of our government, the sort of changes that have happened over the, say, four-year, five-year period. And so if you look at our students, which is one of the key issues that we're looking at, nationwide 16% increase in national enrollments, 49% increase in NRF-supported students over that five-year period. But as you well know, one of our biggest challenges is the level at which we support them. So the numbers may be increasing, but the quality of the support is as important. Excuse me. We, in that context, we only support 94%, and I'll come back to that issue. On the right-hand side, the levels of the qualification profile of our academics, 9% increase, 43% in 2004, and we are sitting at 45% in 2006. The NDP has an injunction for us to move that to 75% by 2030. It is a Herculean task that will not be undertaken by the National Research Foundation alone, nor would it be possible for us to be able to move it unless we are able to resource that particular mandate differently. Contribution of of South Africa to the global science R&D system. We have been consistently moving up, and it's partly the way in which we've invested, 0.63 to 0.79% of global research output. And again, one of the issues, as you will know, that we have reported to you, is also about who is producing knowledge, and hence why our focus on the transformation agenda. Growing the pool of doctoral graduates among South Africans, we have an NDP target of 100 PhDs per million in the population, or moving upwards, and it's good. And we are currently sitting at 50. I'm not sure that we'll be able to reach it, Honorable Kornoff, by 2030, but things are moving up in the right direction. And again, we are making a contribution as the National Research Foundation. In the sense that of those that are funded by the NRF to pursue post-doctoral degrees, 35% of them, of the national graduates, would have been funded by the NRF, although we only support 16% of the total number of doctoral enrollments. This is a snapshot which gives you a sense. You could use this in other fora, Chairperson, because this then says, as government and as a board, over this four-year period, what do the numbers look like? What are they? Are we going in the right direction? Are we going backwards? Are we focusing on the right things? Doctoral student support, I think, number of publications in the Web of Science, which talks about the strength of the South African science system. We don't ever want to be a parochial system that does work that is in the small little corner of the world in the in our continent. South Africa's contribution to world Web of Science, funded researchers, although we need to fund them more adequately. The number of rated female researchers is increasing, but from a low base, and we need to continue to increase on that. The number of black rated researchers is increasing, but again from a low base. So these are things that we are tracking and we want to be in a position to, when we come back 5 years hence in the next parliament, to be able to say that we've changed these figures, and we've changed them not just quantitatively but also qualitatively. Alignment with the medium-term strategic framework, whether it's education, it's health, it's infrastructure, better quality of life, whether it's the protection of the environment, whether it's food security, you'll find us doing work in the various components. These are just an example. I'll come back to our relationship with the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations as well, where we do a similar mapping. From a performance review point of view, Chairperson, we have two sets of indicators. On the left-hand side, 17 strategy KPIs. On the right-hand side, the total number of KPIs. We have disaggregated so that we are able to make sure that we make a conversation on apples and apples. Targets met or exceeded, 65% on the strategic KPIs. Targets missed by less than 5%, 12%. Targets missed by more than 5%, 24%. And I'll come back to the details later, and likewise on the other side. And as the AG has indicated, it's either yes or no. There's no gray area. And we'll talk about why we missed them, what are those particular targets. And very quickly, on the next slide, you'll notice that we missed the target for female students. We missed the target in the research support area for female and for black researchers. And I'll come back to the reason why. By way of example, when we missed the target for public equipment, you may get the money now for equipment. It takes you a number of months, if not a year, to get that equipment installed and commissioned, and only then does it get used. And so the publications come much later. And so we have to work with the AG to have a better understanding around the cycle of knowledge production, from the time when equipment is bought, commissioned, and when research is undertaken, before you actually see the publications coming out. It's not a one-to-one relationship. And so that's an issue that we are going to be working on. Similarly, we missed a target by 1% of NRS senior staff in technical management positions, and I'll come back to that. And again, we want to continue to be efficient, Chair. Public money is important. Every penny must count, and we must be prudent in the use of public money. And so that's why we continue to set our overhead targets at less than 3%. This year, we have met it at 1.8%. That's our performance measure, but our target and our benchmark is always less than 3%, and likewise, organizational overheads have been less than 10%. Very briefly and very quickly, those that were not achieved are less by 5% or less, and the two around female postgraduate student support. We've missed both the proportion and the number by 2 and 5% respectively. And the variance is very simple. Government rightly made a decision around providing fee-free higher education for poor students at undergraduate level. And the money had to come from somewhere. And a large part of it came from the National Skills Fund. You would have seen an article by the CEO of the National Skills Fund over the weekend where he was making other comments, which I'm not sure I want to get into. But the bottom line is that they were supporting us for scarce skills at the postgraduate level. And because of that, boom, that money had to go. We had planned to have it, and our targets were based on the money being available. And so 920 students were no longer funded. So that's what drove that particular dilemma. Other times, we are our own worst enemies in success. The Tandertron that I will talk to a little later at Itemba Laboratories, we were, how do I put it, we functioned quicker than we had hoped, and therefore the expenditure happened in the previous year, not in the financial year, and as a consequence, the AG said, you've missed your target. So And then the other one, number of female South Africans from designated group in technical managerial positions, we missed it by 1%, Chair, and that's something that we have prioritized as a key issue to change the gender composition of our leadership core going into the future. Slide 11, not achieved by more than 5%, and this is around the research cohort, female research supported, number, proportion of black research supported, and it's unfortunately, and it sounds like as if I am moaning, Chair, but unfortunately it is about money, and it is also about people making themselves available. So one of the dilemmas that we've noticed, the number of applications received declined. So we can't give you money unless you ask for it. And it's not as if we don't have people who should be applying. And we don't even want to contemplate having the disruptive environment in the higher education system as a possible contributing factor. We don't want to enter into that debate, but that's the reality that we're facing. But one of the issues that in our conversations with the university community they have raised over and over and over again is that there is a decreasing in the amount of money that we're giving as research grants. Why should I go through an exhaustive, elaborate, demanding NRF review process to get a grant that is only a pittance? That's a challenge that I think we have. And so we've got to find a way of responding to that, and that's one of the big challenges that I think we're facing. Users of national facilities and the number of international agreements, these are technical indicators that we are in discussion with the AG. In the first instance, with the users of national facilities, we had included students. They suggest we shouldn't, and therefore we'll revise that, and because you remove the students, then all of a sudden the numbers drop. Similarly, in terms of international agreements, you can either include an MOA, you can have an informal agreement, you can have a collaborative relationship, and if you then simply say it's a formal contract, then it changes what you count, and that's when the numbers then went in the wrong direction. And then the others, this is my concluding slides of those that were not achieved by more than 5%. Number of active grants emanating from national and multinational agencies. You're partnering. So let me take my colleague and comrade on the far side, Dr. Clifford Nomani, and he comes from Cote d'Ivoire. We enter into an agreement and we say we're going to do things together. And Clifford says, no, you know, comrade, you know, Parliament hasn't appropriated the money. We're stuck. So that's just one example. We have examples where we have those type of issues where our partner did not necessarily come to the party, and therefore we in turn can't perform, and we also have money that is then not utilized for what it was intended for. Likewise, number of publications emanating from student funded, and I did raise earlier about the need for us to work differently, to say from the point of commissioning, not from the point of purchase, and even from the point of commissioning a piece of equipment like the Tandertron, you will probably only see the research outputs 2 or 3 years down the line and not within a short timeline. And so that's something that we'll need to work on. Very quickly, you've seen this particular slide in a different form. In 2016, we supported 9.4% of the total number of postgraduate students in the national system. We don't support MBAs. Too expensive. And in any case, you can pay for it yourself. We don't support postgraduate diplomas. We don't support structured masters. Whether if you're going to do a master's by coursework, we do not give you money to go and study in Cambridge for a master's or PhD. We just don't have the money. It's going to happen. We have good universities here at home, and so the number, the reach is literally 9.5%. At honors level, we support 6%, master's 8%, doctoral 16%, but the proportion of graduates that we contribute to the national graduate at the PhD level, those supported by the NRF,
35%. Age at completion on an average of our students that we support is 33 years of age. Compared to the national average across all universities of 41 years of age, time to completion is also faster because we fund full-time, we support full-time students. If you're going to do it part-time, clearly it's going to take you anything from 5, 6, 7, 8, or even 10 years. And it's a hard, hard slog because you're working and you are. And so the choice that we have made is let's focus on the future, let's focus on full-time, let's try and bring the age of completion down, let's try and bring the time to completion down, and I think that's something that we have presented to the Honourable Committee about the policy choices that we've made in the recent past. The other key issue that has led us to make those policy choices in this particular slide, which is both instructive and worrying. Over the recent past, we have invested heavily in honour students. Our target, Dr. Ntembo Kwayo, was that we will have no less than 80% of all postgraduate students in black. And we've done that at honors level. But what happens? They don't necessarily progress to masters. They don't necessarily progress to PhD. So if you were to do a formal, you don't do very well in terms of that. And that's what you see here. And hence why we changed our policy, which we will stick in 2020, to be able to ensure that the greatest cohort of those that started at honors level complete with a doctoral degree. Likewise with the female representation. And I seek the support of the House. We have a target of 55%. You will notice, honorable members, that we have exceeded that target and we are now sitting at about 60%. I think it would be difficult for us to go beyond that 60% or 59%. Because gender is also about having and giving hope to young men. That there is a future for them as much as it is to give hope to young women. And I think we need to be careful that we don't swing the pendulum to such an extent that it creates social challenges for us. So that's where we are, but the policies that we presented to you when we presented our APP are dealing with this particular issue. In terms of the researcher community, Chairperson, we also have targets, black representation 46%, and female representation of 50%. We are not doing very well, and we want to be upfront, and we don't hide anything, but what we want to do is to say we will be coming back to you, Honourable Members, after we have discussed this matter with the Board on how we're going to deal with this particular matter. But context is important. There are 55,000 research and instructional staff at universities. We don't even yet include those that are working in the CSIR, ARC, Mentec, SANSA, because we fund all those. But there are 55,000. Of that 55,000, 13,000 have doctoral degrees. Of that 55,000, we are only able to reach less than 5,000. And a lot of people will then apply to us, and we can show you the number of applications we receive, the number of those that would have been eligible for funding relative to the number that were finally funded. There's a big gap. So that's the context. In terms of black representation for rated researchers, again, we have a target of 28% for 2020. We will going to be setting new targets when we finalize our strategy 2025. For female as well as black representation to change the nature and the profile and as well as the number of those that are the leaders in our research system. The rating system, as the Honourable Chair was indicating, we celebrate particularly those that have reached the pinnacle of A. Those are acclaimed international scholars and researchers in their own right. They can literally go anywhere in the world and have that kind of understanding. The P's are the equivalent of the young. Those are the ones that will be the future leaders. And part of our challenge, Chairperson, is that we have both gender and race challenge in terms of those that are at the top as well as the young. And again, we will be coming back to you after we've discussed this matter with our board
in terms of what we will be putting in place. But over the last period, Chair, you will see that from a percentage point of view, things have changed. We have the absolute numbers. We can tell you how many exactly are in whatever category, how, what proportion, say by way of example, we were discussing with the Chair. Black researchers constitute about 33%. Female, about 33%. So you've got to understand the basis from which you're working with, where these people are and what they're doing, the nature of the support that they have in terms of where they are, in order for you to be able to help them get to their full potential and their full capability. Everybody has heard of the Centers of Excellence and Research Chairs, Chair. Number of chairs that are there have been increasing. We have also been leveraging support from the private sector. I want to, by way of example, thank the chair of the First Rand Foundation, Sizwe Tansanga. He's been very instrumental in putting resources into the chairs program. Recently had chairs that are jointly funded by Nedbank, as well as private industry who have been putting resources into the chairs program. Likewise, with the Centers of Excellence, the industry has been putting resources there. And one of the important things, Chairperson, is that not only do NRF-funded students get support from chairs and centers of excellence, but those that are not funded by the NRF. So you will notice the number of students funded by SACHI chairs and centers of excellence, NRF-funded as well as others. The alignment of the COEs, the SACHIs, the national research facilities with the SDGs is on the right-hand side. And by way of example, you would notice, Chairperson, we have 7 chairs that are dealing with the issues of poverty. It's a matter that is seizing our society, and we need to find creative ways of bringing knowledge to bear to find solutions to issues of poverty and inequality in our society. We brought them together as communities of practice, and they're now working with the presidency to find, hopefully, different solutions, different ways of attacking that particular problem that really is a plague in our society. Investment of our mandate, Chairperson, $4.7 billion in the year under review, and the bulk of it goes to research grants and bursaries. the bulk of our money of grants and bursaries goes to students in the form of bursaries. Just under $1 billion. $700 million goes towards research chairs and centers of excellence. But in terms of investing in the future of our researchers, this is the young people, and maybe sometimes not necessarily young, but people who started their career late, what I would call emerging or early career researchers, we are only currently able to spend less than $230 million per year. That's what we spend. And I think for the health of our system, that's one of the major challenges that we have to confront. Otherwise, what happens is that you support the top, you support the students, but when I finish being a student, there's nothing which enables me to move from being a student to being an A at the top. This is how money is currently put together. We respond to the Department of Science and Technology's grand challenges in terms of the National Science and Technology Strategy. The grand challenges of bioeconomy, energy security, global change, and human and social dynamics. That's where the bulk of which actually goes to the global change program. Oh, sorry, the human and social dynamics program in RAND and percentage terms. But in all of these cases, you will notice that in real terms, we're going backwards. In nominal terms, the numbers may be going up, but the increase is always below CPI. And so we have that challenge, and it's a matter that I know that the chair and the committee raised at the last budget meeting. Similarly, with the other grand challenges and geographical advantage areas, which include astronomy, the Southern African Large Telescope, the SKA, Hart-Crow, SAO, and so forth, a similar issue, and that's slide 22, Chairperson. The number of students, the number of chairs, the geographical advantage areas, excluding astronomy, which is the paleosciences, we have a unique capability there. For those that, Chairperson, we haven't had a meeting in Marokain, have we?
No.
Can we organize? because I think, again, that's a, in the same way that we always get wowed with astronomy, the paleoanthropology and the related disciplines, particularly human paleontology and paleoanthropology, is something that is unique to our country. That's why it is called the cradle of humankind. But you'll notice that we only spend $34 million in the year under review as a country on paleosciences. So these are the challenges that we are facing. Nothing wrong with spending 64% on biodiversity, given the value of biodiversity, but we may also reflect on whether that is sufficient. The other disciplines, we sometimes get a perception that we don't support the social sciences and the health sciences, the humanities and so forth. This wagon wheel gives you a sense, while the bulk of the investment is in the biological and chemical sciences, a huge and a respectable, healthy amount goes to the arts, humanities and social sciences, as well as medical and health sciences in terms of that spread. Engineering, law, agriculture, material and physical sciences, economics is as important as computer sciences economics. We often talk about the fourth industrial revolution and AI. AI also requires lawyers. Who are we going to account? I mean, our chair is going to be hopefully be one of those that will lead us on this. Who will we hold account when a machine does something wrong? Is it the person that wrote the code? Is it the person that's operating the machine? Or do we make the machine a human and a person? It's cars. There are issues of ethics. So it is more than just the physical science that these issues talk to. It is also about the holistic nature of how knowledge is brought to bear to be able to deal with how society deals with the human-machine interface. Chairperson, the National Research Infrastructure Platforms, Clifford Momani, our Deputy CEO there, and I need to start speeding up. The National Zoological Garden left us, sad to leave, but we are happy that they've gone to SANBI. We continue to have a strong and powerful relationship with SANBI. We continue to actually invest in the NZG for reasons that you know. But our national facilities provide unique and necessary and substantial infrastructure, capabilities and services, human capacity development. And there they are, ITEMBA, SIAB, Science, SAO, and the Radio Astronomy Observatory. ITEMBA Laboratories, quickly, I talked about the Tandertron that was commissioned. Unfortunately, we commissioned and paid it too early, and then the AG has clumped us. And we actually made the payment the year ahead. And GAMCA, we have approval from our board to look for a 70 megavolt cyclotron for radioisotope production and fundamental research. When you visited the ITEMBA laboratories, is it a year ago, Chairperson, you saw the big one. That one is 30 years old, is creaking at the seams, it operates 24 hours a day, and if it were to close, we will have to close ITEMBA laboratories. And so we are looking for a mechanism of making sure that we don't close ITEMBA and we don't stop this sort of research, we don't stop, as the Honorable Tuck was asking us, around isotope production for medics, health and medical use. Environmental Observation Network for science and monitoring and assessing biological change. And Chairperson, we would be grateful if one of these days you could visit one of our nodes for SION. We have three here in Cape Town, and so we could arrange for you to visit one of the three nodes, either in the waterfront, where we work very closely with fisheries, agriculture and fisheries, because we do the monitoring of fish stock, or in Kirstenbosch, where we do ecological change, and they were very helpful to the city of Cape Town when we were talking about the water issues. Our smallest facility at Itemba, at SIAB in Grahamstown, performs aquatic biodiversity, both freshwater and marine. And one of the things, Chair, that we would be grateful if one of these days you do have time is to visit SIAB. It's small, out in the rural areas. We have a dedicated program called Polisa, which only takes black students. It doesn't matter where you come from. We have students from Venda, from Sibasa, from anywhere, who want to do marine science. You have never seen the ocean, but you now want to do marine science. And that's what we have created it for. And one of the challenges that we have, Dr. Lottrick, is that a young man or woman will come never having learned how to swim. And so you've got to teach them how to swim before you can teach them how to dive. And you've got to teach them how to drive a car, because otherwise how do they get to the ocean to do their work? And so these are the sort of things. That's a performance for the year and a review. The South African Astronomic Observatory, you heard about the multi-messenger astronomy. There was a big media release last year. MIRLIT is going to be tied to MIRCAT, where MIRCAT is looking. MIRLIT will be looking, but from an infrared. So we will then actually be talking to this idea of multi-wavelength astronomy. The SETI has now been commissioned, the 1 meter telescope. I think 2 years ago we had a young man who actually won the naming of that telescope. And this paper, Chair, is one of the most cited papers of 2017 in astrophysics. And you will find it's because for the first time in the history of humanity, we were able to find the source of the gravitational wave, and that was done by the men and women of the Astronomic Observatory. 2020, the SAO will be turning 200, and we are looking forward to working with you to celebrate that particular milestone. I don't need to say anything more about Sarau and the MIRCAT chairperson, slide 31. You were there. You saw it with your own eyes. We have delivered MIRCAT. We have been coming here, Honorable Thak, being asked, when is this thing project going to be complete? It is complete. It is finished. It is operating. We delivered it on budget. There is a little wobble in terms of some of the issues that the AG has picked up, and I'll talk to. And on the right-hand side, that is the image of the center of the Milky Way taken by MIRCAT. And as one of the important outcomes of the project is that we were able to build the largest, or maybe I'll put it more positively, the fastest supercomputer on the continent, the 75th fastest in the world, at a rate far, far cheaper than what we could have bought it from, because we have the technical know-how and we know what we are looking for. Science engagement, Chair, there are many things that we do, but this is going to be possibly done differently, and we'll come back to you. But for the first time in our history, it will now be a statutory mandate. We've been doing it. We have been working with children, students. We've been working with teachers. We have been in as many corners of the country as it is humanely possible. And if honorable members want to know which districts and which district municipalities we have reached, we have the details. Just by way of example, honorable members who may not be aware, there's a young man called Chilidzi Marwala. Chilidzi is the Vice Chancellor of the University of Johannesburg. Chilidzi first worked with us when he was a grade 12 student and won a science Olympiad. I can't remember, Bev, it was 1980, I think it was 88 or 89.
No.
And that is how this young man started a relationship with the National Research Foundation. And from there, the prize was for him to go to the UK. And we took him, they went to, Cambridge or Oxford, and then he said he's coming back, and he did eventually go and get his PhD from there. So you are able to touch young people in different ways, and the outcomes you see in a manner that I'm just explaining. This is young people commenting about us in their own words. And by the way, it says something about some people being blessers. The CEO is not a blesser. The organization may be seen as a blesser in terms of doing the right thing for the right reasons. But these are just examples of what young people say about what it has meant for them to get the sort of support. And finally, I'm just about to conclude, Chair. From a monetary point of view, our parliamentary grant, as you can see, has been where it is. It has increased in the year under review by 4.9% in nominal terms. In real terms, it has been going backwards. You will see that contract income and ring fence, all these others, I was saying to our chair, chairperson, the board only has authority over 20% of the budget of the NRF. And that is already bespoke. The chair has to pay salaries. She's got to do maintenance. She's got to look after all the things. So we can't make the sort of movement that I think sometimes I think the board would like us to do. This is from an expenditure point of view, grant operating expenses. This is slide 35. Capital expenses, but what I want to focus more is the little boxes on the right hand side. Salaries is the percentage of total expenditure excluding grant, 51. Our target and our benchmark is 55%. Because remember, we have researchers that we look after at the National Research Facility. Research salaries as a percentage of total expenditure is 15% because we issue a lot of grants going out. Operating expenditure is a total percentage of total expenditure is 45. Maintenance is where we have a major challenge. Rule of thumb is 10%. You should be spending 10% on maintenance. We're spending more than that, and it's increasing. Why? Because the infrastructure is getting old. The older it is to maintain, it breaks more often. The costs of maintaining it increase. The parts have to be replaced are many and more often, and that's an issue that has led us to look at some of those sustainability issues. And I'm coming close to the end, Chair. Audit outcomes. For the last 10 years, we have had qualified audit. And that's an absolute minimum, an absolute minimum. We missed this year and last year a clean audit for reasons that I will come to. But the most important thing for us, Chair, is the importance of probity, making sure that there are never any material matters of audit findings. We should be released of our responsibilities if we were to get a qualified audit. And I'm not saying that because the chair is here, but that's a principle that the management of the organization takes as a minimum. We take this aspect of our work incredibly seriously. So good governance leadership is incredibly important. The key issue for us is around the non-compliance with SEM regulations due to recurrence of some irregular expenditure. Although I want to stress, Chairperson, full value for money was received in all instances. And there was some performance information that was made, was adjusted post-submission for the audit, and that's part of what I raised earlier around some of the performance information. And obviously, remedial action has been taken, including where necessary disciplinary action having been also taken for those affected individuals. I think this is my penultimate slide, Chairperson. This is the regular expenditure, and should we want to come back to this, we can go through it. And one of them that really tripped us was the variation not pre-approved for the road leading to the operational site in Carnarvon. It's a road that is owned by the Northern Cape Department of Transport, but we had to fix it, otherwise if we didn't fix it, we don't have access to the facility. And it'll go back to the Northern Cape Department of Transport on completion. That, I think, vision was, of that 28, it was what? 25, yeah. That was the big item, big ticket item. And you notice for us what is worrying, two quotations not sourced. Last year it was zero. Number of items is 19. So we keep track of these things because that in itself for us is a worry. Sometimes you can have one item but with a big amount. Other times you can have lots of items but cumulatively they make a small amount. But in all cases, 100% of the items identified through internal monitoring, every single one, none of them slipped through the cracks. And not necessarily by the internal audit, by even us as management, we pick these things up. So we have our own conversations about with the HE as to whether or not our systems are leaky, or whether there are also instances where individuals are just simply trying to cut corners, because there's human nature at the same time. Issues of tax affairs, suppliers not registered with CSD. We had a big issue last year with the Auditor General about whether a supplier, because we sometimes source, Chair, equipment from outside of the Republic. I'll use a silly example. We buy a piece of equipment from Outer Mongolia. They're the only people who can actually deliver this piece of equipment. So the regulations say this person must be registered with SAS. The guys in Outer Mongolia said, "I bugger you. We're not going to register with SAS. Who's SAS anyway to us? Do you want our thing or you don't want it?" So you get these quirky issues. And part of the conversation that we've been having with the auditor is how we deal with those, should I say, unique things that we sometimes find, so that we are not seen to be flouting treasury regulations and public funds. And as I said, value for money was given in all cases, and the 2718 increase was predominantly due to the variation of the SK road that I talked to. Going into the future, Chairperson, we are preparing for 2025 strategy, 25 years of freedom next year, and therefore likewise there should be a need for us to say the next 25 years must be better than the first 25. And in the way in which we construct our 2025 strategy, informed by our Vision 2030, need to be able to deliver better. The white paper is going to be discussed. We are preparing our response to our minister. The enactment of the bill, we're preparing for that. I'm told the select committee is going to be meeting sometime, I think the first week of November, and we'll be there. We are looking at issues, Chairperson, as I said earlier, continuous development of a research agenda, accelerating the transformation agenda, and preparing for the implementation of the policy choices that we presented to you in our APP in 2020, where we want to deliberately enhance equity of access, success, and throughput of postgraduate students using funding policy decisions that we have made. Chairperson, let me pause there. The difficult questions will be taken by my colleagues. Thank you.
but they didn't make any presentation. They must take difficult questions. Thank you very much, Dr. Pavela, for the presentation. Back to members, I can see we are pressed with time. But let me get members. See, there's another committee that I'm chairing that Dr. Tembevayo must be at, and my co-chairperson is out of the country, so it's me that must chair. If he was there, I would be fine. So, can we, okay. Honorable Dr. Lotre, Honorable King, Honorable Dr. Tembevayo, and Honorable Tusk and Honorable Full, that order thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation. I don't really have a question. I just want to confirm, as the Office of the AG was here earlier this morning and referred to those matters, so it relates to the Itemba, that 25 million, I think.
The SKA.
The SKA, was that the okay, that's okay. No, because you also referred to something about Itemba that I just made a note on.
It was a performance issue earlier, but it was not raised by the AG.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Tembevayo.
Yes,
thank you very much. I also wanted to ask specifically on the fruitless expenditure, as it was mentioned in the auditor's report, and it says to say it paints the picture, the beautiful picture of NRF something. So in the future we will have to make sure that we do not become part and parcel of the fruitless expenditure. And secondly, in the statement that you made, you said the honors and masters students who do not progress. Some of you may mention of that. But my argument would be why and what are their reasons. Do you have a questionnaire at the end where you get to know the depth of the reasons why there is no progress in the ultimate end? Maybe it's not only about the supervisors, but they need some other type of support to keep them going in the whole progress as it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tuck.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, what measures have been implemented to mitigate against incurring further irregular expenditure that resulted in a finding by the AG? Thank you.
Honourable Fuller.
Chair, mine is around slide 37, the summary of irregular expenditure. Where I'm looking at the nature of non-compliance, and I'm asking myself to say these are the prerequisites when you whatever you give a tender, whatever you call it, when you look for, and then people are not complying, but they are still being given a business. How comes? Because it's part of the prerequisite. The second issue. It's around that the challenges around the international, buying from international into South Africa, issues of checks. I want to understand the AG around that, did they say anything around it, or is there a plan to make sure that these kinds of things, you know, they are being covered? And I heard you talking about Itemba, to say the challenge there is because you pay them in advance. Well, no, I just wanted to clarify, how do they get paid in advance? So I thought that you said that. That's why I want clarity on that. When it comes to maintenance, obviously we know that for maintenance, you know, this, if it's a building, for how long it has been there. In terms of your plan, how do you plan so that you can do the overhaul maintenance? To say for this year, we're going to plan and budget for the overall maintenance of this building, so that when you finish it and it's out of the way next, when it comes to all those things that that get owned and you know about it. So what is the plan around that? Because the way you are saying you spend a lot of money on that because of its bits and pieces, in terms of renovating or maintaining it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable King.
Mine is just plain and simple. I see your research output is now 0.79%. Just a statement to say that it's quite below the 1% we would have loved to have had, and that will pose a challenge, especially for you moving ahead in the future. Then also your staff turnover. You currently have a target of 6%, but you're sitting at 8.8%. How do you make up the funding of that, given that you have funding challenges as of yet? And then remember last year you were discussing about your funding structure, your framework with the department. Is there any progress on that, please? Thank you.
Thank you very much. On the issue of the female that you are to bring in, it just reminded me of a situation in my previous life when you wanted a project to be given to a female-led company. You know, you say we are behind here, we need to do this and stuff. I think the difference where the executive authority says that and the administration was so different, because then after that the word out was that the speaker says we must, yeah, there's a person she knows that you must so I just understand the catch 22 that you do this sometimes, you are seen as nepotism and stuff like that. But also I think on the investment in the mandate, the expenditure, I think it's good that the actually administration gets the least, it's on 2%. But lastly is to say that we understand that you need more money. I think attending the NRF awards is testimony on the kind of work that you do and the amounts that are needed to ensure that we continuously fund and recognize innovation and other work that is being done. And as a committee also, we had sent a statement to congratulate Dr. Benny Fanaroff as a lifetime achiever. And I also take the issue of your outside partners or stakeholders, and like the Mongolia example, that it becomes you agree and you put it as part of your APPs, and then when the other partner is not complying, then it sits with you. And lastly, just to say that at the launch of the SKA, it was interesting to see how interested the deputy president was on science and technology, and also the BRICS summit, the focus around science, and even the telecommunication, the president continuously referred to science and technology. So the bug is beginning to bite them at the top. And in our study tour to South Korea and Japan, we saw the importance of research and development, science and technology, being right at the top, you know, in the office of the president, so that it's monitored there, it's implemented, there's enough funding and stuff like that. So we're very hopeful. And we just also thinking of questions to the deputy president and the president in relation to those the interest thereof. Yeah, thanks. Let me give you to respond to Honourable Member.
Chairperson, I'll ask my colleague to send me. Oh, apologies, Chair.
Apologies.
I'll ask my colleague, Mr. Singh, the CFO, to talk to the issues around the audit outcomes. That way we can deal with all the issues of irregular expenditure and so forth. The issue of Itemba, we didn't pay people up front.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that the project was concluded the year prior, i.e. we are reporting on 17-18, but it was paid in 16-17 while we had planned to finish it in 17-18. So the payment was correct to the supplier, but early because the project was finished early. And from an AG point of view, that then becomes an issue because you had planned to do it later, so you should have stopped working. And yeah. Don't run too fast. Chairperson, I'll be very quick. Dr. Tembokai, one of the major problems that young people do not progress is because there's pressure on society, on them, and likewise in our society, for people to get jobs and money. We currently have a situation where I finish undergraduate using National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Now at least I don't have to pay a loan, but currently, if you have finished, you had a loan to pay back. You come to the National Research Foundation and they give you half of what you were being given by NSFAS. Why do you continue to do masters? Because you've got a loan on the side to pay. So resources have clearly been shown as a major, major, major bottleneck in terms of people not progressing beyond. And hence why we made the strategic decision as a board that we're going to change our funding policy. If you are young, you're smart, you're gifted, you're hardworking, you don't have the resources, we'll guarantee you that funding from beginning to end. That way, you don't have to worry about money, all that you have to worry about is your own performance. And I'll just talk to quickly to Honorable King the issue of yes, it's going to be a struggle to get 1%. It will be a struggle. We'll push hard, but I think we're going to fall short based on the trajectory that we currently are in. And the staff turnover, yes, our target is 6%. We are looking at 8-point-something. But we can come back and have a conversation because what we tend to see is we lose the people that we don't want to lose. And we retain those that we wish we would lose. And I think that's a challenge that many organizations face, and I think we are. So the chair was in PE. The vice chancellor has just now taken two of our bright young women. Vice Chancellor of Nelson Mandela University, who we are grooming to get into executive positions. Salavi. Funding framework, we had a very good meeting with the Director General of the Department of Science and Technology. I think we're making good progress there. And we'll be bringing that matter back to the board. And then, Mamfulo, the issue of maintenance. It's less than about the buildings. We're not worried about buildings, we're worried about equipment.
An example.
The research, yes, but the buildings is an example. Research equipment is more challenging. So at some point, we will have to replace those telescopes that you saw. At some point, we will have to replace salt. At some point, we will have to replace all these highfalutin, and that's where the real challenge is. Because it's not as maintaining that and replacing is not as the lifespan is not the same as managing the, but it's the same principle, and hence why you notice in my very first slide I talk about one of the key issues around sustainability is about renewal, replacement of essential infrastructure. Bishop, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CEO.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chair.
Chair, there are several questions. I'm going to try succinctly to try and pull this together. I think the NRF has had a great run for the last, besides last year, 5 years of consecutive clean audit awards. It was the dismay to the NRF, just as the concern with the committee, that we've lost that clean audit award. I think we're very disappointed. And I think the assurance that we want to give you is that we are committed to seriously deal with this thing. I had personally taken up this matter of irregular expenditure with the AG in the last week of the audit. We were assured that we have a clean audit award, but in the last week of the audit, the AG escalated this matter. Rightfully so. We know we don't want to defend that. As the numbers show there, and the reason for the AG to escalate this matter was simply the number of transactions. Now, when one looks at the technical details, 19 transactions worth 435,000 rand. So the number increased, and that's the reason the AG did that. The second thing was the value that increased because of the one irregular expenditure on the completion of the road, despite the fact that we got Treasury approval for that road. But I'm not going to defend it from that perspective. There are things that our staff did not do right. From Dr. Tembekwayo? You are absolutely right. There are certain things that should not have happened. For example, issuing procurements where there's no tax clearance certificates. But that's an issue that Molapo, Dr. Q tried to cover earlier on around the foreign procurements. What are we doing about it? I compiled an 8-page report to the AG around the various preventative measures that we have taken in the NRF, and they range from various things. Changes to the policy in the NRF, changes to systems in the NRF to prevent things from bypassing to the next level. Training in the NRF, 3-bit committees training, but Chairperson, some of these things do fall through the cracks at times. Unfortunately, because of the complex nature of the NRF and the complexity of things that we do undertake in the NRF, primarily because of the uniqueness of some of the things we buy. Now, why I raised the issue of technical discussions with the AG, and I relented at the end of the day, and I said perhaps we learn from these things. Because some of the things that we buy are downstream work. You start off on a unique item, and then it becomes downstream work. And the argument from the AG side was that, no, you should have gone out for 3 quotations. We accept that. But end of the day, you'd have an unfinished product. Because somebody started something, and then what it will do then, it will tread into fruitless expenditure. And I'll come back to fruitless versus irregular expenditure. So, Chair, we share the concerns of the PPC, and I think we are committed as an organization. I, as a CFO, am very dismayed that we've lost that clean audit award. And to be, I was sitting here earlier on, you probably noticed me, Chair, sitting at the end, to hear the AG's response. We were one of the entities in the DST portfolio that did not get a clean audit award, and yet we shared the joys in the previous years. When the others were not getting clean audit awards, we were getting clean audit awards. So now it looks like when you reach your peak, it's hard to maintain that. And that's not an excuse for us. Slide 37 we focused on a lot. Last year, the example that my CEO referred to, when the AG referred, and I was clearly listening to the AG talk about some of the technical issues that then end up at the National Treasury level. We were one of the entities that challenged the AG on the technical matter of procurement from foreign entities that do not have a resident company or a subsidiary in South Africa. Last year, they gave us a major audit finding. If you go into our financial, into our AFS, we then contested that. And the National Treasury then did an investigation, and they found that we don't need a tax clearance certificate if a company is not resident in South Africa or does not have a subsidiary in South Africa. But we took the challenge up. And I think many organizations in the country accepted that finding just blankly, because that's what the statutes say. So there are pros and cons around the technical nature of each one of these things. My CEO dealt with the Temba Labs issue. I just want to go back one step, Chair, if you'd allow me, between fruitless and irregular expenditure. I think we must be very careful as colleagues and the media as well. There is a definite distinction between the two. Fruitless means you got nothing out of it. With irregular, you may have missed one step out of 20 different steps in the procurement process. And you can see the list of things. If I didn't get a disclosure of interest form from a company, it's irregular. So I think we must be very careful around that.
I'm sorry. I want you to not to cut you, but I just want to ask Dr. Lotrit to close the meeting. And if you could please excuse me.
I'm sorry.
No, apologies, Chair.
Yes, colleague, so you may proceed if there's anyone else who would like to answer any questions.
Chair, I think we have pretty much covered all the issues unless honourable members believe we haven't answered anything. But what I would like as the Chair is moving on is to say that we are hoping next year the organisation will be turning 20, the country will be turning 25, and we are hoping to have our awards here in Cape Town, and we are hoping that the whole committee could...
We'll talk to the secretary.
Thank you very much. Perhaps I should, just like my colleague, say that is it pre or post election, because that would be a determining factor.
All our awards happen in September, and so we would be confirming the date in the next month or so. So it will be post-election.
Then we might be here or not be here.
On the other hand, through your Chair, we can always say that those that are members of the PPC are always honorary members of the PPC.
Thank you very much. Thank you also to the representatives from the NRF. And we do appreciate the hard work that you do. And I wanted to say we commiserate with the fact that you don't have a clean audit, because that is what we expect of the NRF, but we do understand the reasons that were preferred for this. So thank you very much to everyone, and thank you, colleagues, with Energy.
According to the agenda, we are finished. Is it? Yeah, so we're going to. You know what? Let me break my spirit. The problem. And the only person that's coming up is Joyce. But yes, she's older than all of us. Man, older than she said. But what happened to your Irish? Did the Irish come back?
I don't know.
Taken me out on personal abuse. Sorry? No. Because I just wrote with my name there. But if they take it out, this is not branches. Nobody has nominated anybody here.